again, and today I'm joined by Brittany and then another Brittany, Brittany Cavallaro, who is the author of A Study in Charlotte. So welcome, everyone.
Hi, guys. Hello. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, we are super excited. Brittany and I have both read your book and discussed it, and now we want to discuss it some more. So we're so happy you are here because we have a lot of questions. Yes, so excited. You have no idea. But before we get into all of that good stuff, let's talk about what we've been reading. So, Brittany, I'm going to call you Bree so we don't get too confused, if that's okay.
Okay. Totally fine.
Like two Brittany, it's like a Brittany squared kind of day, and it's going to get all kinds of crazy up there. So I think it's the best way to do it. So, Bree, have you been reading anything fun and exciting lately?
I think the best and most interesting and weirdest thing I've read recently is Parker P.V. House's book Where Futures End. It came out a little earlier this year, and it is just like, it's like the YA George Saunders meets David Mitchell meets like sci-fi climate change mythology. I have no idea how to describe this book.
Whoa.
But it's like nothing I've ever read, and I think more people should be talking about it because it's just amazing.
Excellent. Very cool. All right, and Brittany, what have you been reading?
I finished Paper Princess. I wasn't on the review episode that where you guys talked about it last week. I kind of liked it. I did. I'm kind of glad I wasn't on the episode just because I think I would have brought some of the conversation down.
No, Karen did that, actually. You'd be very surprised.
Yeah, she Karen did. She did message me about it. She's like, please tell me what you think so I don't feel so bad. I was like, because I think she kind of knew. She knows what I like. And
yeah.
Yeah, she already
knew. Exactly.
But then I started reading the book that you actually sent me, the advance copy of You Know Me Well by Nina LaCour and David Levithan,
yes.
Who, you know, is my all-time favorite. And
it's so good.
I just want to finish it because I was in a reading funk for a while because I was reading so much at work. I read all these scripts all the time. And so this book really drew me back into, like, a reading mode, and I just wanted to finish it in one sitting. But, you know, we got things to take care of, life to live. So I'm excited to get back into it tonight.
That'll be awesome. I started The Raven King by Maggie Stiefvater. I know. It's so, you guys. So it's the fourth and final book in the Raven cycle. And this book is so, like, this whole series is just so different and quirky. And I love the mythology that she's crafted within this story. It's so, so good. And it's not like any of her other stuff. This is by far like the most unique thing and kind of just fun and different thing that I think she's written. And I'm very much into this book. And I read the prologue literally and had to like set it aside for a minute because there's like a huge reveal in the prologue that I don't think any reader of the book was expecting. So
oh my
when
gosh.
You get to it, you're like, what? How? What? And so I don't want to say anything because I know others are going to be reading it. It's, you know, it comes out on Tuesday. And so I don't want to, but when you read it, you'll know. You'll be like, wait. It shifts the idea of the story once you have this piece of information, I think. And so I'm on like the 13th chapter already. And I'm like savoring it. But at the same time, I'm trying to like hurry up and read it. But like with her writing, it's so unique and intricate. You have to read it a little bit slowly or you'll miss something. But I love this world and I love what she's created and the ideas of what the different people represent. And it's just, I'm loving every minute of it so far. And it's hard because I usually listen to them. And the actor Bill, I think his name is Bill Paxton. He's the one that reads the books and he's got such a cool voice. So to actually physically be reading it is a little bit different for me. It's a different experience for the books. I like it, but I still might download the audio and just listen to it because I just like the way he reads. So we shall see. We shall see. But I will update everyone next week on how it ends and how I feel about it because I'm kind of sad that it's ending, but we'll see.
I'm so excited.
I know, you guys. Oh, if you haven't read this series, you really need to pick it up. And now that all four books are out, you won't have the pain of waiting for the next book because that's always the most difficult thing for me when books are in a series and they're kind of tense is that you have to wait for the next book. And I'm not really good at waiting. My patience runs thin sometimes. All right. So Bree, you are our guest and we're going to talk all about you for a little while. Hope that's okay.
Yeah.
yes, let's do it. All right. So you are the author of a brand new Sherlock Holmes-ish book and it's called A Study in Charlotte. And what I love about your book is that it's not this kind of reincarnation of a Sherlock Holmes. It's just like a different spin on the idea of these two families in existence. So you kind of made these two characters the relatives of Sherlock Holmes and Watson, which I think is so cool and such a different idea than what we've seen recently in literature and on TV. So in general, what inspired you to become a writer? Like, was it always your dream, or is it something you stumbled onto?
I think it was pretty much always sort of the plan. It was like the only plan. It became like abundantly clear as I was growing up that I was totally useless for anything else. And I remember being like 8 or 9 and like watching the X-Files with my dad on Sunday nights, pretending to like not be terrified, and then going up to my room and writing like dramatic X-Files poetry in my notebooks about like aliens and how cute Fox Mulder was. It was always sort of like the way I interpreted like the world and things I loved. And I always wanted to like take stories that meant something to me and like build on them or like take inspiration from them. And I definitely burned those notebooks a couple years ago because it was like, nobody can see this. This is insane.
You're like, no, absolutely not. That cannot be out in the world.
Yeah, exactly.
I love it. So was A Study in Charlotte kind of one of the first things you actually wrote, or have you written other things that you kind of just put aside and decided this was the one you're going to go with for like your debut?
Well, I'm kind of a weirdo in that like I work in a bunch of different genres. And so for the longest time I thought like, oh, I'm going to be a poet because like I'm not really interested in like eating or like having a like a roof over my head. So I like went to school for it. I like did my master's in poetry, and the whole time I was taking fiction workshops and writing short stories about teenagers. But, you know, I was like, oh, you can only do one thing at a time. I don't know where I got that idea, honestly, but it wasn't until I was like doing my PhD and I was supposed to be studying for like my big comprehensive exam, the thing that like lets you pass on to the next phase and you have like a couple months to do it. And I was like, yeah, this would be a really good time to write a novel. So I like panic wrote Charlotte in like 6 weeks. Any moment I wasn't working on it, I had to be studying. And I mean, obviously, like the book was just like this total mess, like upside down, inside out when I finished. And I had to spend a lot of time revising it. But it was finally the moment where I was like, I know what I want to be doing. And poetry is one thing, but like there's no reason why I also can't be writing novels. So Charlotte is the first thing that like I wrote a practice novel before that took a long time and was terrible and was about angels and is locked in a drawer where it will like stay for the rest of its life. But Charlotte was the first one where it was like, oh, okay, I think this is actually a thing. Like this feels like it could be complete.
Wow. See, you're a girl after my own heart. I too had an exam to study for this past fall, and I did everything in my power to avoid studying. Like I would do anything and everything. So I am like, you can ask Brittany. Every time we run a podcast, I'm like, oh, I have to go try and study when we're done this, but it's probably not going to happen. I'm only going to read another book. So I'm with you. I get the avoidance tactic. I did not spawn an amazing book or anything. But.
Yeah. Every time we got on Book Hype and we were like, what have you been reading? And Jen's like, well, I've been reading these exam materials, but I also read these 8 books and, and I reread an entire series too. And I watched 8 seasons of Gossip Girl.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yep. I'm telling you, you're really productive when you don't want to study for something. It's amazing.
Totally.
When you can get done.
Totally. I think we should all like sign up for the LSAT so that we can all like, you know, start like running marathons and saving the whales.
Yes.
I think it's the only way it gets done.
I'm serious because I had to take my BCBA exam and I was like, I'll look at that stuff later. It'll be fine. And it worked out okay. I still passed, so it was fine.
Exactly.
Yeah. So were there certain books from your childhood that you read and stuck with you? Or was there something that you were really into reading when you were younger?
I mean, obviously the Sherlock Holmes stories were like everything to me. I loved those. But I also, I loved Diane Duane's young wizards books, like So You Want to Be a Wizard, Deep Wizardry. Like, I think she just put out the 10th one.
Didn't think anyone else in the world knew about those books. I was obsessed.
They are
with
so
them.
Incredible. They do that thing that I love where they're both sci-fi and fantasy at the same time. Like, it's like really mechanical fantasy or fantasy that has like really specific scientific rules and just so cool. Deep Wizardry, the one with the whales, is like my favorite thing.
My friend and I in grammar school, like, this was like a like weird, like my first ever exposure to like someone else read besides Harry Potter, because everyone read Harry Potter, but like I would buy one and then he would buy the next one in the series and then I would buy the next one in the series and we'd like trade them. So I own like every other book, and I was one day I was like, why did I do this? I want all of them. And so I had to go and buy all the ones that I like didn't, but it was that was like such a cool series.
Yeah, I loved it so much. I'm so excited you read those. It felt like they were always like my secret. I could never find anybody else who
exactly.
was reading
them. That's why when you said it, I'm like, yes, that's the thing. It's like a huge part of my childhood, but like no one has read it, so I never talk about them.
Okay, so what kind of books do you enjoy reading now?
Oh, hold on.
Oh, I'm so sorry. It just kicked me off, but I'm back.
Yeah, I heard the Skype thing go, and then I was like, wait, okay.
I'm so sorry.
No, it's not your fault. It's Skype as always. This happens to us multiple times usually. So
yeah, and we usually record we record two podcasts in a day. Usually, we record one in the morning and then we'll record one later tonight after Once Upon a Time. And it's like every time, it's just struggle city.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Sundays are tough for us. so what kind of books do you enjoy reading now?
You know, I like things that feel like morally complicated and that are subtle and strange. I really love complex relationships. I mean, like, I love that we were talking about the Raven Cycle earlier because I'm just like stone cold obsessed. I love those books. And then, you know, there have been some debuts recently that I've been reading that are just tremendous. Like, I loved Emily Henry's The Love That Split the World. I loved how ambiguous and strange the ending is. It's totally worth reading. I really love Jeff Zentner's The Serpent King. I thought that was just so well done and, like, heartbreaking. Just, like, I'm a sucker for any stories that have to do with, like, found family. You can totally tell I'm, like, a Joss Whedon fan. Like, I love, like, I love, like, the Band of Misfits more than anything else.
Those are always great stories, though. There's always so much you can do with a big Band of Misfits, you know? They go so many different directions. Love it.
Exactly.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about your book now, A Study in Charlotte. And I have to say, I read it and I listened to it because I was kind of in between doing things. I was driving a lot, so I got the audio so that I wouldn't miss too much and be able to keep up with it and hardly finish it. And have you listened to the audio of the book at all? Like, if you heard the guy who reads it?
Yeah, so I've listened to the first chapter, but I have this weird horror of, like, hearing my own work. And I really, I mean, I really love the way he does it. I've also heard the epilogue, Julia Whalen doing the epilogue, but... yeah, I know. I thought it was really great.
The whole book is really great when he reads it. Like, oh, I love him. He was fantastic. So props to whoever chose him because he's really good.
That's amazing.
So so good. Loved it. So what was your kind of gateway into the Conan Doyle universe? Do you remember the first Sherlock thing that you read?
I think it was The Speckled Band, actually. And I remember what happened was my grandfather gave the stories to my little brother, and like I was so immediately like jealous, and I like absolutely had to have it for myself. And so I like thieved those from him and read them all through and loved them. And it wasn't until really like, I'm trying to remember, I think like I was 11 or 12 and then like in the way of all things, like sort of moved on. And in my early 20s, like when I was reading a lot of 19th century fiction and reading a lot of detective fiction, kind of came back to them and I was like, oh my gosh, this rabbit hole goes down forever. I love everything about this and all the adaptations, and just started like mainlining it as much as I could.
That's awesome. I am a huge, this is the only, the Conan Doyle stories are the only like collection where I will watch every single adaptation and read every single adaptation of it just because I love this world so much. Like, I actually didn't get into Conan Doyle through Edgar Allan Poe because,
oh yeah,
I was reading that in school and they were like, oh yeah, you know, this was like the first detective thing. And, you know, I was like, okay, but I thought that because I always thought that Conan Doyle was first. And then I was like, well, yeah, but now I want to read more detective stories. And so I just devoured Holmes as well. I love it.
I love
so
it.
Much. Mm-hmm. Do you have,
I love,
oh, go ahead, Jen.
Oh, I was going to say, I just love mystery stories in general. So I always find that all the variations that somebody can do with a Sherlock Holmes story so fascinating, because it's this one set of characters in this one time frame, and yet they can take them and twist them and make them all these so many cool things, and yet still relate it back to that original story and work. And that's what I love about Sherlock Holmes, is that he's a character that's so flexible and so kind of timeless in who he is and what he does and how he does it. And so that's what I love about the stories. Even though I do love the originals, I love to see how creative people can be with all of the new aspects of the characters and stuff.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And Brie, you had a bunch of references to some of the stories within your book. Do you have a particular favorite one, or one that maybe like didn't make it in due to like
where
the story was going?
I mean, there's definitely one that didn't make it in, and it's almost because it's like too dear to me to like try to mess with it in any way. Like, I love the Musgrave Ritual. It is like my favorite Sherlock Holmes story. I love every part of it. I love the butler, who's like way too smart to be a butler and also kind of evil. I love the weird ritual that everybody in this family that Holmes visits has to memorize. I love Holmes like running around with a yardstick in someone's like grand English manners, like measuring oak trees. Uh-huh. I think it's all like absurd and fun and still creepy. A Study in Charlotte is less about puzzles and more about horror, I think. Or not horror per se, but like murder and like the uncanny and the unnerving. And that was one of those stories, the Musgrave Ritual, for me, that was more like a logic game. And so it also just didn't really feel like I could find a way to work it in.
Gotcha. Yeah, my favorite one is kind of like, it's The Adventure of the Devil's Foot, because I just think it's so horrific. Like, when you walk in and see these people with their, like, heads thrown back in laughter, but they're, like, deceased and they don't know why, and one person is still kind of going crazy, and I'm like, that image just stuck with me. Like, it's so terrifying that I was like,
oh, it's so creepy. And then of course it has like one of the best Holmes and Watson moments ever near the end of it, where Holmes like is like, okay, like, I'm going to do this experiment. I think I'm going to try burning some of this drug that made them go crazy.
And
Watson is like, I'll stay here, I guess. And he has to apologize to him after. It's the only moment in the whole canon where Holmes apologizes to Watson. He's like, I am so sorry.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good. It's like, it's the perfect little nugget of a story, and it's one of the shorter ones, and it's just, there's so much packed into it.
It's really amazing.
Okay, so in your story, your characters are descendants of Watson and Sherlock. So which descendant would you rather interact with? Alternatively, which family would you rather grow up in? Would you rather be Holmes or Watson?
Well, okay, so I feel like the whole draw or the appeal of Sherlock Holmes is always that like everybody secretly thinks that maybe with a couple things altered about them they could be the genius, but we're pretty sure like ultimately that would not work out. Like, there's no way that I could ever be a Holmes. I'm sort of a Watson through and through. And I've actually like, I love Sherlock Holmes as a character, but I think my heart has always been with Dr. Watson, especially like the Watson of the original stories, not like the kind of bumbling Nigel Bruce Watson from the movies and like the early 20th century is not my thing. But I don't know. I'm definitely a Watson. I'm like loyal. I think I'm smart, but I'm not the smartest person in the room. I'm like very attached to my friends. I would probably, if one of them called me and was like, can you get a 45 and a shovel? I would be like, yeah, that's fine. Where should I meet you? So I feel like that would probably be the family I would have grown up in.
Okay. How about you, Brittany? Which one would you be?
I did give some thought to this. And I think that I ask too many questions. So I feel like I'm not as blindly loyal as like a Watson needs to be. So I think that I would have thrived in a Sherlock environment where every part of my, like, day and life was mapped out for me. And, like, you know, you can find those ways to have relationships like Charlotte does with her brother, but there's still that, like, tension there, but there's a playfulness. So, like, there's a little, very little room to, like, break out. But I think I would just, not even so much for the being, like, smart and knowing everything portion of it, but just, like, the structure, I think I would have done much better in a Holmes environment.
Okay. I don't know if I would have guessed that that's what you would have said, though.
Really?
That's interesting. I like it. Yeah.
What would you be?
I don't know.
Do you think?
I think I would be a Holmes. Just given, like, the way I like to study things and the things, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, the things that I studied at college, and I think I would be a Holmes. It's very scientific-y and very research background, and that's all what I do. So I think that that would be me.
Well, call me if either of you guys need somebody to solve crimes with. I am, like, available. Yeah.
We like it. And Brittany just mentioned, you know, Mycroft and or not Mycroft. Yeah, there we go. Whew. Losing my brain because I'm going to get them all confused now. He's Milo, correct? What's his name in the story?
Yeah, Milo.
In the story, okay. He's a Milo.
All right. Wait, I'm like, wait. Too many characters with very similar names. So Milo in the story. So how did you craft kind of these other characters that are still related and similar to the other characters that we know? Like Milo is very similar to Mycroft, and then we have the Moriartys as well. So how did you kind of decide to craft them and build them as characters?
For me, it was like, it's when in the universe of a study in Charlotte, like, I really wanted to, like, play the great game that Sherlockians play, where we pretend that Holmes and Watson were real, that Watson wrote the stories, but that the stories are different than the actual events of what happened to them. Like, they're actually just sort of, you know, in the way that, like, if we write down something about our lives, like, we change details or what have you. And so in a lot of ways, Jamie and Charlotte are, like, very aware that there's, like, kind of, like, a difference or, like, this very thin line between, like, reality and the way that we write reality down, how we like portray it to each other, like with what mythology we like create. So in some ways I think they're almost aware that they're in a story, and at the same time they're not. So for me, like when I was adapting these characters, obviously Milo is a nod to Mycroft, and they have Jimmy and Charlotte have a house mother living in their dorms who's very much kind of a Mrs. Hudson figure. And I really wanted to have those nods to the story. And in a way, I think the characters are also sort of aware that history is repeating itself. That, you know, the Moriartys are still running around. And while they're not necessarily evil, I used to, like, when I was, you know, originally coming up with the concept for this series, I thought a lot about the Moriartys as like a crime family. As an Italian growing up in Chicago, it's hard to not occasionally think about the mafia. So, you know, just not that everybody there is evil, but that, you know, and I don't necessarily like believe in evil even as a concept. I believe in selfishness more so. And, you know, in this world, the Moriartys are like, they can be in the family business, and the family business is crime. So, yeah, I don't know. And more than anything, I think when I was coming up with these characters, the new versions of these characters, the descendants of these characters, I was just thinking a lot about like inheritance and like nature versus nurture and choices. Like Charlotte and Jamie are, you know, in a lot of ways, a lot like their forebears, but they're also trying to figure out ways in which like they are their own people. And that was a really important arc for me to start in this first book, and is going to be explored in the next two.
Yeah, excellent. One thing.
So will
that,
we get this? Oh, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. You're good.
Oh, I was gonna say that, like, bouncing off of that with incorporating things from, you know, canon and nature versus nurture in here. What was the decision like to include Charlotte's addiction in these stories? Because when I got to that point in the story where I was like, oh, we're going, I liked it. I was like, we're going there. Like, cause I really love the adaptations that really press that issue. And those are some of my favorite storylines. Full disclosure, I am the largest Elementary fan on the planet.
I love it. Yeah.
I just love that they address that. And when it came up in this story, I was like, yes, this is definitely going to be my new favorite series, because I think it's such an issue that people shy away from when they're adapting, or they, like, you know, it's like a wink and a nudge. But so what was that process like going into bringing that storyline in?
A lot of it had to do with reimagining Sherlock Holmes as a teenage girl. And I wanted to map all of the things that I think are problematic about Holmes as a character. And I mean problematic in a good way, complex, interesting, you know, kind of in the gray area of morality or good decisions. He's a difficult person in a lot of ways. You know, Dr. Watson is Sherlock Holmes's like human credential. Like, we know that Holmes is in fact like a person with a heart because he has this best friend who is so clearly like a good guy. And, you know, while Holmes like is like on the side of justice and, you know, goes out and solves cases that the police won't take, tries to help out people who can't be helped otherwise, you wonder sometimes if he's a machine or if he's a human. And I think we're a lot more willing to accept a lot of those qualities, these vices and character flaws in a man. And I really, when I was reimagining him as a teenage girl, one of my big questions was like, I might just be crafting a really unlikable character here just by virtue of the fact that I've changed this character's gender and aged her down. Mm-hmm. The fact that she's not necessarily, I don't know, like she doesn't really have use for people or for friends. She's very guarded. She's very prickly. She has a lot of defenses. In a lot of ways that I think Holmes as a male character does. And it was really important to me to actually like go all the way there and say, okay, what would it look like to be, you know, someone who's vulnerable, a teenage girl in a position where there's not, you know, like there's not a lot of parental oversight. She's away at school and she is doing drugs and finding herself in situations where, you know, she is not necessarily safe. And I wanted to just spin that out. It was sort of like, I kept asking, well, okay, if that's the case, then what would happen when I was fleshing out Charlotte's backstory? I've been getting some emails from readers, that have been breaking my heart a little bit that are like, oh, you know, I really wish that like, this wasn't the case for Charlotte. I feel so sad for her. I really wish she would get help. And, it's something I really want to dig into and am digging into in the next two books of the trilogy is what happens to Charlotte Holmes now that she's like finally finding her place in the world and what's going to happen with her and her addictions and her flaws.
And that sets up a great way to further explore her relationship with Jamie Watson. So, cause he's the one who kind of is like, you know, you need to stop doing this. You need to eat, like, you know, pushing, like he senses those things just like a Watson should. And he has like that rule book from his dad, which I thought was an amazing, amazing touch. I thought that was so funny. And like, I want my own copy to be like things not to do with the Holmes. but yeah. And I was curious. I'm sorry, Jen. I know you can jump in with questions.
No, go, go.
This is like sparking a train of thought with me. When these two started getting close, when as you were writing in these two characters, did you naturally feel them coming together as a couple? Or did you kind of shy away from that at first? Because I was like, I don't know if they're going to get together. Like I had a sense at the start that it was like going to develop into something more. But then towards the middle, I was like, no, maybe this is just going to be the, you know, the Holmes and Watson just partnership, not romantic. But what made you take that turn with this?
They sort of insisted on it. And for me, like the central question or the central emotional question of the book, like past the Holmes stuff, past you know, getting to play around in Doyle's sandbox, which has just been amazing. But I really wanted to know what would happen if you had, you know, a boy, a straight boy and a straight girl, who are teenagers, who are everything to each other, like past best friends, you know, but maybe not necessarily boyfriend and girlfriend. They're sort of in that like ambiguous place where they are everything to each other. Mm-hmm. And the question is then, like, especially when you're a teenager, like, okay, does that mean we're in love? Like, does that mean this is romantic? Like, I had so many really kind of ambiguous, very romantic friendships when I was a teenager where the lines were really blurred and it was unclear what I wanted. It was unclear what they wanted. And Holmes and Watson has always struck me more than anything as a really romantic friendship. But that also means that, like, we're going to see Jamie and Charlotte, like, as the series goes on, like, really wrestling with that question, like, are we good for each other? Like, is this relationship good for the two of us? Like, and I mean relationship as friendship or relationship. They're trying to figure out what they mean to each other. And I think it gets kind of complicated for them.
Yeah, I'm really glad you – the way you worded that was so perfect, because I think that because I was reading this and, you know, you're in a YA kick and you're reading all these things where, like, oh, they end up and you're meant to imply that it's romantic. But you're absolutely right. There's nothing in here that's like, okay, now they're boyfriend and girlfriend. And I'm really glad that you kind of – not clarified it, but, well, clarified it for me – to where I can see that relationship not as like, okay, when this book picks up, they're going to be dating and all this stuff. Because it's not, and I think that that would be such a leap for Holmes to get to that point.
Yes.
But, yeah, no, that's really interesting. Thank you for saying
right.
that.
Right, and, no, of course. And you know, and I think in book one, too, we're beginning to see just the sketches of the effects of, you know, being sexually assaulted and what that does to anyone, or especially to a girl like Charlotte. And that's something else we're really going to spend a lot of time with. And that, of course, is going to have a major determination on what kind of relationship she has with Jamie. And what she wants might be different than that, too. So it's all sort of like in this big, like, relationship stew. And hopefully we'll just keep brewing it for the next few books.
Yeah, that's great. No, all right, Jen, I'll stop hogging
the author. And I love that relationship. Well, I love that relationship because it is complicated and it isn't just so cut and dry when it comes to the romantic aspect of it. Because like Brittany pointed out, in so many YA novels you read, it's like a foregone conclusion that X, Y, and Z will happen. And so you can always kind of gauge where that relationship will go. And in this one, you can't. The dynamics are different. The complications are different. There is a little bit of a love-hate vibe sometimes between them, which is always really fun and enjoyable to kind of see play out. So I really enjoy where they're at right now because it is complicated and I love complicated stories and characters and watching it play out. So I'm really excited to see kind of how you develop all of that moving through the series and stuff. So
thanks.
Yay. Good question. All right. So I was going to ask another question. I'm trying to remember what it was now because we just got into a whole different topic. No, it's okay. This is so good. There's so many things to talk about. So moving ahead in the series, because we've talked about it a little bit, can you give us any hints about anything we might be seeing, any different characters we might meet, anything like that?
Sure, yeah. So book two, I'm calling it my, like, I've been calling it my spring break book, even though it's the winter break book, but it picks up pretty much right after book one. And it's in Europe, and there is an art heist, and there are Moriartys, and maybe one Moriarty in particular, who figures quite a bit at the end of book one, gets some screen time. And then we also spend a lot of time with Leander Holmes, with Jamie's dad's best friend, who becomes a major character.
Ooh. Oh, fun. I love it. I love a good art heist. Love it.
And so Europe. Exciting. I love Europe.
Europe and art heist. I mean, really, does one need anything more? Probably not. But Leander Holmes, excellent addition as well. I'm so excited. Hooray. All right, good.
Yeah, and we're going to like see them in an environment where they both feel differently about. Like, you know, you have Watson like having this homecoming and where he feels more at home. And then you have, it's going to be so good. I'm very excited.
Yay.
I know. So many things. So when is that book set for release? Probably not until this next spring?
Yeah, so it's like, or it's like winter technically. I think it's coming out pretty much a year from A Study in Charlotte. So like, yeah, like March-ish.
Okay. Marking my calendar now so I can prepare. All right. So as we've talked about, there are lots of different versions of Sherlock Holmes on TV, in the movies, in all kinds of books. So we're going to play, well, actually, before we play our fun little game, Do you have a favorite, like, contemporary Sherlock Holmes version? Is there somebody that you actually, like, love? Because there's a lot of Sherlock Holmes on TV right now.
Yeah, no, I mean, so not a contemporary one, but not an older one either. It's on YouTube. I am obsessed with the Granada adaptation of Sherlock Holmes from the 1980s. Jeremy Brett is like, when I first saw their version of A Scandal in Bohemia, I was like, this is the Holmes from my head when I was a little girl. It was just like full body chills, like tears, like I adore him. And I think that series is just so tremendous.
Yeah. All right. That relationship is so fun to watch.
I know. They're so wonderful. In the 1980s BBC Radio 4 dramas with Clive Merrison and Michael Williams, like, you know, I'm like, I love podcasts. I love radio dramas, but I've never obsessively listened to something like I listened to those. And they really hit the friendship in this way that just like, oh my gosh, you should listen to their take on The Lion's Mane, which is this like post-retirement Holmes story where technically he's like recounting a case that he does without Watson after he like moves to the country to keep bees and like Watson's back at home. And the BBC version, the radio version, redoes it so that Watson goes out to visit Holmes in the country and he walks him step by step through a case he did without him. And it turns out to be the most heartbreaking, like, I can't. I'm sorry, I'm like tearing up over here on the phone, but you absolutely need to listen to it. It is just the best thing.
Ugh, my commute is going to be devastating tomorrow.
I apologize in advance for any tears you might have.
And Brittany, do you have a favorite? I know it's a silly question for me to ask. I know what your answer should be.
Yeah, it's definitely, I don't know what it is about Elementary, but it just, I love a good procedural. So already going into it.
Johnny Lee Miller.
Yeah, it is. It's mostly Johnny Lee Miller, but also like I love House. Like I really loved House.
Yes.
And like, I naturally got into procedurals because of House. And so after that, when they picked up Elementary, I was like, this is going to be awful, like New York, modern day, like, but he's still British. Like, how is this going to work? And then it just, it's taken over a small portion of my life. So yeah, that's definitely my favorite.
Good. Okay.
What about you, Jen?
So now,
do you have a favorite one?
What's that? Well, how about me? Yeah. Is that really my favorite one is the BBC one with Benedict Cumberbatch because
yes.
He plays like sociopath on such a level that's just so intense and so good. And that show is very smart in the way it does things. And I always, if I can watch something and have surprises be involved and not always know what the answer is going to be, I really enjoy that because I read so many mysteries. Like a lot of times, like there's a pattern to things. Mm-hmm. So you kind of figure out what's going on in the plot before you actually get to it. But in those stories, they're just so smartly done. And the way they take some of the well-known characters and twist them and make them different, I just really enjoy that play on how they do things.
They also have the most adorable Lestrade of all time.
Yes.
This is so true. Yes, I do.
So cute.
I love him. So yeah. Yeah. So definitely that's my favorite for right now. But I mean, I watch Elementary. I watch a lot of the other ones too. I just prefer the BBC one. So anyway. All right. So now that we've talked about our favorites, let's play a little Kiss, Marry, Kill with our favorite TV and movie versions of Sherlock Holmes. Is everyone
ooh,
ready? Have you
can we play with Watson's too? Or is this a
sure, I was going to suggest
situation?
I will allow the Watsons. The Watsons are in. Let's do it. So now we have to rethink the process. So many choices.
Well, we could do Holmes.
I know. Right. It's so difficult.
I know.
Yeah.
We could. Absolutely. However you guys want to do it, I am game.
Yeah, let's do one Holmes and then one Watson.
All right. You guys are like all prepared. I'm like, oh, I have to think of Watson. I already planned out my Holmes versions. I have at least two Watsons. Okay, so my Holmes version, and you guys are going to probably be a little surprised by this. So the Kiss one would be Robert Downey Jr. from the movies. Okay.
Interesting.
The Mary would be Johnny Lee Miller from Elementary. And then the Kill, believe it or not, would be the Benedict Cumberbatch version from the BBC. While I love him, he is crazy and ridiculous and the least, like, do you know what I mean? Like, the least reasonable of all Sherlock Holmes. So he would have to go.
Oh my gosh.
I know, right? It's a little unusual, but that's where I'm going. So which one of you would like to go next?
I can go. I can give Jen a couple more minutes to think about it.
All right.
Go ahead.
So I think that for me, I would probably kiss Benedict Cumberbatch because I feel like I kind of want to know what it would be like, especially after that, like, isn't there that scene where, like, in, like, the fake version of what happens post-Reichenbach, like, he kisses Molly Hooper and it's, like, the most epic kiss of all time.
He, like, shakes the glass out of his hair first.
I would kiss him if it was that kiss. That is that scenario that I would go for that. And I would definitely, I'm just going to say I would probably, I'm going to rewind a little bit and I would marry the Jeremy Brett version because I find him just like the consummate gentleman who also has no time for being a gentleman. And I would just like trot along behind him holding his bag and like writing down his adventures like any proper Watson would. And I would probably kill Robert Downey Jr. just because I can't understand a blessed word of his English accent. It's just like mumble town and he's so adorable. But like, if we couldn't talk, I feel like that would be no kind of relationship. So that would be my call.
All right. I like it.
All right. So
Brittany, are you ready?
Yes. I would kiss Jeremy Brett because I just think that he's adorable. And
yes,
I would marry Johnny Lee Miller. And of course, because I think he's so adorable when he's in a relationship with Moriarty and he cares so much when he's actually, like, in love. So I feel like that would be perfect. Mm. And then I would also immediately – that was the first one I solved was kill Robert Downey Jr. I was like – I didn't even have to think about that. I had the kill locked and loaded.
It's really, that was hard on the list. It was good. Oh, that's I love it. All right. So have you guys thought up your Watsons?
I'm having a hard time with the marry. No, with the kissing one. No, not the kissing one. The killing one. Yeah. I'm sorry.
The killing. It's hard to kill a Watson.
I feel like I can't kill a
Watson. You feel like you're slaughtering a baby lamb.
Yeah.
So we could just do marry and kiss and marry. We don't have to do a kill. We can wipe the kill off. Yeah. And unless someone has one, then we can throw it out there. But we can I mean, adjust for Watson because I understand that.
All right. I can sacrifice someone. I think I got it.
All right. Go ahead.
Okay. So to kiss, it would be Robert Sean Leonard, who plays – well, it's Wilson from House just yes. because – all right. He's adorable and I love him. Mary, I would definitely marry Martin Freeman's Watson because he's just so adorable and angrily frustrated all the time, like just slightly on edge. And I think he's so great. And I would sacrifice Jude Law to the Watson.
No. Oh, wow. That's cruel.
Oh my gosh.
All right, Bree, do you have yours?
Yeah, but now I'm just, like, so conflicted and sad inside at the thought of sacrificing Jude Law. Robert Sean Leonard is an awesome, awesome choice, but I think for me, I would – okay, I'm, like, going to totally get into character psychology here, so forgive me, but I would totally kiss Martin Freeman from the BBC Sherlock because they really get the whole, like, I am a man who has an experience of women across three continents thing down. And I'm pretty sure that, like, Martin Freeman's Watson is a dog in the best possible way. And I would not want to be married to that. But after watching the show and also after seeing Martin Freeman and Whiskey Tango Foxtrot,
oh my gosh,
I feel like I could get some
so
makeout action.
Adorable.
I would be so happy with that. I would absolutely marry the Guy Ritchie Jude Law Watson. I think he's the best part of that adaptation. I love that that adaptation is like a rom-com between him yeah. and Holmes. And I just can't get over it. I think he's smart and loyal and like very frustrated. And it is totally my favorite thing. And if I were to kill anyone, I think I would just have to go back in time and just kill Nigel Bruce because everybody thinks of Watson as being sort of slow and like useless because of that adaptation. I think Aww. We could probably sacrifice him in his bowler hat.
Okay. That's actually a great idea.
Excellent.
All right, okay. Jen.
So, I don't really. Okay, I have like two, because I could only think of two Watsons. Like in general, I'm like drawing a blank. So I had Kiss Martin Freeman and I had Married Jula, because those are the two that I could think of. So Brie and I are very similar. I didn't have a kill. Sorry, no killing on my end for
no one. No one killed Lucy Liu today, so it's great.
That's right.
Oh no, nobody could do that. I'm pretty sure Lucy Liu would end us if we got too close.
Yeah, like right. Within 100 feet, she would just like kill us with a look.
I did think about it, but I'm like, no, because that's just not fair. That's just throwing one out there to throw one out there, and it didn't seem right. Totally. She deserves better than that. All right. So, do you guys have anything else that you wanted to talk about?
No.
Because that brings us to the end of our conversational topics.
I'm just really thankful for all of your insights into this world, because I love to play in the Conan Doyle world as well. I'm applying to like TV writing programs and my spec scripts are elementary, so.
Oh my gosh, I love it.
I love playing around.
I love it.
In this world so much.
Well, thank you for letting me talk Sherlock Holmes with you guys. This is like, I can think of no better way to spend a Sunday morning.
You're welcome to come talk with us anytime. We love Sherlock Holmes here, and we frequently diverge into Sherlock Holmes conversations on our episodes.
After my own heart.
All right. So thank you so much for coming on. And for those of you, if you have not picked up A Study in Charlotte, please make sure you do. It is so, so good. So until next time, I'm Jen.
I'm Brittany. And we have Brittany.
Oh, and me.
Bye, guys.